You're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. Do you want to speak with confidence and authority, have more influence, and get bigger and better results? Whether you're a top executive, an entrepreneur, or climbing the career ladder, this is the show for you. The leader who wants to inspire others and leave a lasting legacy. Now here's your host, world-renowned TEDx speaker, author, and executive communication coach, Dr. Laura Sekola.
Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sekola, your host, founder of Vocal Impact Productions and author of Speaking to Influence, Mastering Your Leadership Voice. My guest this week is Melissa Shoger. Melissa is the Vice President of Finance for Identification Solutions and Vestcom, two divisions at Avery Dennison. She's got her master's from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and she's got 20 years of experience in various GM and financial roles. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Laura. I'm so happy to be here.
Tell us, Melissa, what is your fun fact?
Well, very interesting story. So I've been blessed throughout my career to be able to travel the world. And one of the fun trips I was able to take my children on was a safari in South Africa. And at the time, I think my boys were 7 and 8. And so imagine 7 and 8-year-old boys and a young at heart husband. And we were approached by a young elephant who was poking around at the Jeep we were sitting in. And I was sneezed on by the elephant very forcefully.
Oh.
And you're always warned, obviously, to not make any noise when an animal approaches. So we all sat there in silence. And as soon as the elephant walked away, obviously, everybody burst out laughing. I nearly burst out in tears because I was obviously covered in elephant goop. But it's a story that lives on to this day in infamy in my house because, you know, mom was sneezed on by an elephant.
I just had this flashback to Ghostbusters. Like, were you just completely slimed from head to toe in?
It wasn't quite that bad, but it was, you know, it was pretty bad. Luckily, it was a chilly morning, so I was covered in a blanket. So it wasn't, you know, all over my clothes.
No, but just in your face and your hair. Blah. Oh my goodness. Okay. I will never be able to erase that visual from my mind. That is such an incredibly sensory oriented story. Wow. Well, I'm sure your boys thought that was the funniest thing ever.
Yes. They still bring it up occasionally. They do.
Yeah. So, I mean,
great memories for the whole family. Yeah. A little scarring for me.
And do they have pictures that live in infamy? Did they all whip out their cameras as quickly as possible to immortalize the moment?
Thankfully, no. Nobody had one handy because it was such close proximity. Nobody could move either because the elephant was so close. Nobody moved quickly to startle it. So nobody was able to capture the blissful moment of my elegant demise.
Oh my gosh. I'm just sitting here with my mouth open with 18 billion thoughts going through my head and none of them crystallizing in articulatable. And I just sit there and I think of my 7-year-old who right now thinks that anything booger or toot related, shall we say, is just the funniest thing on the planet. Yeah, I think he would bust a gut at that point.
Mine are 11 and 10 now, and it doesn't get any better, just so you know.
Thank you for the warning. Okay, so on that note, let's move away from boogers and all things of that sense and move on to something a little bit more focused. Melissa, please tell us about Avery Dennison. What's your 30-second elevator pitch?
Yes, so as you said, I work for Avery Dennison. We are at heart a material science company, but we do make labels. And really what our focus is bringing together the intersection of the physical and digital world. And what that really means is we sell inherently labels, the physical, but we inlay them with an RFID tag, so radio frequency tag, but we also sell solutions, so software, as well as hardware devices to read those. And what that means is that when you put our RFID-enabled label onto, for instance, a carton of lettuce at the farm, I'll give you an example in our food industry. So when a farmer puts an RFID-enabled label onto his carton of lettuce, it traces through the entire source from source to table, essentially.
Yeah.
So that way, when there's a recall, it can be instantly traced throughout the supply chain, you know, when it was produced, you know, farmed, et cetera. So we allow stores to cycle through inventory because they know the age of the product. So cuts down on food waste, et cetera. Also in logistics space, it ensures that the right package gets on the right truck. So from a sustainability perspective, obviously lots of cost in putting the wrong product on the wrong truck, lots of back and forth on trucks. There's a lot of cost in carbon emissions and just dollars associated with those last mile mistakes. So having that enablement really saves a lot of money and again, cuts down on food waste and cost associated with those things.
It's so interesting to think about labels as, you know, we just think about it as something you stick on a Christmas card or a package or something, but not that it has that ability in something so small just to be able to track every stage. I mean, it gives farm to table a whole new meaning.
It really does. And again, we're really focusing on that connection between the physical and digital by offering the software and the hardware that enables you to read that RFID and also capture the data that's on that tag as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, exciting news coming out, you know, and something that's perhaps more relatable to the average consumer, not that people don't care about food waste and getting their packages on time, but we just announced a partnership with Amazon. So I don't know about you, but I've spent hours in line at team shops. You know, when you go to your favorite team's events, you know, your kids always want their favorite players' jerseys.
Yeah.
Well, Amazon and Avery have announced a partnership where our RFID tags are on items. And basically, it's just walkout technology. So basically, you can walk into the store, put on your favorite jersey, and just walk out. No more waiting in lines. From what I hear, you know, Taylor Swift could have used it at her concerts.
Yes. So, and there were all of a sudden all these kiosks that just
the lines
working
for hours. It seems like it would have been very useful if we could have done it just a few months earlier.
Oh my gosh,
summer.
Taylor, look at that. How much more merchandise could have
helped
that
Taylor?
Day?
Who knew?
Oh my goodness. So let me get this straight. With the quote unquote just walk out technology, whatever the RFID tag is in the merchandise, I presume you have to walk out like through sensors at the door or something. And
yeah, there's RFID sensors. That's the Amazon product. But the readers basically have you have to have an Amazon account. Obviously.
I was going to say it's got to register your account through your phone or something
exactly
along those lines.
So when you walk out, it automatically charges your card based on what you have in your hand. And
interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look at that. This is what's coming to a team store near you and who knows whatever else in the not too distant future. And that's amazing technology. And with all of that, what is something that you wish more people understood either about your role, your company, or your industry? And what is your role in changing that perception?
What I am doing to really change this perception of being just a scorekeeper is working actively with each of the GMs to find their pain points and work actively with them and their teams to identify how I and my team can provide the analysis and the data they need to make actionable decisions more quickly, to make better decisions and also know when to course correct. One of the biggest points I think that is helpful is to know when to change your mind. I think that that is as equally as important as making a quick decision is knowing when to decide that course is not the right course.
I would imagine that's a hard decision to help people make if they're reluctant to do it, whether or not it's clear to them internally that course correction is necessary. There's ego involved. There's pride and shame and all that kind of stuff, you know, public, what happens if I change now? So for you to come in as finance and sort of help encourage them to make that change as early as possible once the writing is on the wall and before you get too close to the wall and crash into it, as it were, am I understanding kind of the reframing of the partnership role and the advisory proactive role rather than reactive?
It is. It's trying to get ahead, not just with the financial aspect, but to really try to develop relationships, not just professionally, but on a certain level personally, so that people will listen to your advice, not just as a purely financial advisor, but for instance, I appreciate when a GM calls me and asks for my advice and what I would do in a certain situation. And I will give it. I will give my advice. And they may or may not take it, obviously. But the fact that they're asking tells me that they value my opinion.
That's great.
And I will also tell them that I think it's time to course correct. I'm relatively new to this division, so I'm giving lots of advice. Some is or is not being listened to, but that's fine. I think that in my giving direct feedback, it also allows the person you're giving it to support their own decision.
Sure. You're giving them input, right? So they can make an informed decision and they've weighed as many options and perspectives
as possible.
Because
if they can't support it to themselves in telling you, then they might talk themselves into saying, oh, you know what? You're kind of right, because I can't even convince myself to you
right
that it's the right decision.
Interesting. Yes, certainly the advisory role is far more proactive than the scorekeeper role, to say the least. Now, was there ever a time that you thought you did a great job of explaining something only to have the audience give you that deer in the headlights look in response?
Have you ever tried to explain deferred anything to anyone?
No. Deferred gratification to, well, lots of people.
Children.
But beyond that, yes. And myself, frankly, depending on
well,
what it is.
Well, it's the same concept. Yes. Of course. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to change the direction of that question a bit.
Okay.
I was in a meeting just a few weeks ago where it was a meeting of a leadership team. But it was functional leaders, right? But part of a leadership team. And it was very interesting. A gentleman stood up and was arguing his case on a specific point. And at the end, somebody summarized what he thought he had heard from the discussion. And someone else spoke up and said, well, that's not what I heard. I heard this. And three other people said, no, I heard different things. And I just thought it was very interesting that I think it happens not just in finance. I think it's very important in any meeting that you're in to make sure that even if it seems very obvious, that you actually all understood the same thing, because we all bring our own preconceived idea of what, I mean, I, regardless of no matter how open-minded I try to be, am going to bring a finance perspective and an accounting mindset to every discussion that I'm having, just as a marketing person is going to. So I think that it's really important that before you leave any discussion, especially when it's a very important topic, that you make sure that at least the important basics, particularly when it's a topic that is going to then be cascaded and communicated out to your teams, is very clearly and concisely, everybody is going to say the same thing. And it's not going to be like a game of telephone,
yes,
where it's slightly different depending on who's telling the story.
Yes. And honestly, that is such an under-recognized, much less underrated skill set to be able, A, not only to make sure that everybody's on the same page with their understanding, which to your example is often not the case by any stretch of the imagination, but then to be clear enough on what needs to be relayed to whom. If everybody, you know, if you've got a bunch of decision makers who each have to share that message and the next steps and the implications, deadlines, et cetera, with their team, who may then each have other direct reports or shareholders, stakeholders in one way or another, where all these have to be related. And it does turn into that. I'm noticing a theme about being 7 years old today in this conversation. So I'm not sure what we're leading with it, but that game that, you know, we played in first and second grade of playing telephone, that whisper down the lane, call it what you will, but where you start with one message and by the time you get to the person at the end, whisper, 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 it doesn't resemble anything like what the original message was. And we all have that frustration when we've experienced that in the workplaces where, of course, there's a lot more riding on it. So to be able to communicate a message, not only in a way that's clear, but where everybody else knows what they are supposed to communicate to whom and how, so that it retains its original integrity in passing down from layer to layer through that chain. It's so important to be able to do that. That seems like a great challenge for you at the moment, which is a great segue for you now to challenge the audience. It's time for our listener 24-hour influence challenge. So, Melissa, this is your opportunity to speak directly to the audience and challenge everyone to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
Well, you may or may not believe this, but I am actually an introvert. And so I would challenge everyone who may have doubts sometimes of whether or not to speak up in meetings to speak up and challenge yourself to contribute in meetings in the next 24 hours. For those of you who do contribute and don't have that introvert problem, such as myself or some others in the audience, to maybe take that pause and allow the more introverted amongst your team that you know and who you know also are great contributors the chance to contribute in those meetings. That would be my 24-hour challenge to you.
And that other end of the spectrum would, I presume, be the extrovert challenge, the propensity to need to speak as opposed to the propensity to hold back and never or rarely be comfortable speaking or figure out how to jump in or whatever it is, just jump on in or wrangle those extroverts to help you and have them pave the way, open the space for
encourage
you.
Encourage your introverted friends to speak up.
Let's balance the playing field in the meetings. I think that's terrific.
Exactly.
Well, what about a time when you needed to assert yourself powerfully? Tell me about that.
Well, do I have a story for you, Laura?
Okay.
Imagine I'm going to set the stage of this. I'm in the Frankfurt airport. It's the Fraport meeting area in the Frankfurt airport. So once a month, my boss would fly over for the day. We would meet in the Frankfurt airport with my entire leadership team. The end of the day, literally the day before we were going to do, luckily, the internal brand launch of this new rebranding of our European entities, right before he's about to walk out the door, he says, "Oh, I've decided we're not going to go with this branding."
On like the day before it
launched. The day before, like everywhere around Europe, there's cakes in the refrigerator, you know, balloons are up.
Oh,
like
no.
The whole internal launch parties are planned. Yeah.
And he just like launches this over his shoulder as he's walking out the door, kind of the same way. He'd say, "Oh, by the way, I'm going to be a little late for dinner." Okay, no problem, of course. And you handled this how?
So, as I said, my entire leadership team was there. We took a moment of stunned silence. My VP of sales and marketing, who was French, well, he's still French, but
understood.
He was slightly more impassioned and started to argue. I calmed him down as my boss walked out and we just sat there for a moment in stunned silence and said, "Okay, well, we have his flight back to the US.
You weren't trying to figure out how to ground the plane. This is not the intention. You're just going to meet him at the other end.
I have a tendency to say things that I will regret if I say it in the moment.
Okay.
And those can be career limiting moves. So I did not.
Wise advice. So good observation of wisdom. Okay.
Do not do career limiting moves in the moment when you're angry.
Yes. So what did we do? He got on the airplane. Everybody's freaking out.
He got on the airplane and I spent my entire train ride back to Cologne, which is about an hour and a half, typing an email. And I also broke a rule, which is don't type emails that you have to scroll twice to read.
Okay.
It was longer than that. But
got it.
I wrote it, rewrote it, and sent him this email. And apparently, as soon as he landed in Cleveland, he called me that night. So it was pretty late in Europe when he called me.
Sure.
And we argued. Argued is a strong word. I mean, there was no yelling involved.
No, but I can imagine it being tense. a rather tense and intense conversation about what was going to happen in the next 12 hours. And where did we go with this conversation?
I lost. I lost the argument. We did not go with the branding that we had wanted.
Okay.
But he did not win either and get the branding that he wanted. So we settled on a compromise. We did not, however, do a brand launch the next day. So I did have to go and tell the entire European organization that
just eat the cake.
You know, it was let them eat cake, right? But there's no brand launch. Don't ignore. I was like, can you wipe off the writing and just let people eat?
Yeah. Hey, everybody, we're just going to have a cake party today, kind of because we like you. I get oof.
So that was my biggest takeaway, is to be thoughtful. You're not always going to win, but a thoughtful approach. And we came to a compromise where nobody was probably happy, but a decision was made. But it was not fun having the rug pulled out literally less than 24 hours before a big event. I mean, this was a huge
continent-wide.
Me, my team, and, you know, it was like, imagine the stunned faces.
Right. Oh, how frustrating that would have been. I imagine that does not sound like fun. Well, heading on from there, tell me about what was the most nervous that you ever felt before a presentation or speaking engagement, and what communication lessons did you learn from it?
Well, I would say the most nervous I have ever been is before a global leadership meeting that I was attending, and my boss was called away unexpectedly. He was the person who was going to give this presentation. Of course, I had prepared the presentation, but I had not prepared to actually give the presentation.
Oh, and it was less than
small detail. So I knew the content, but it's totally different than having to actually stand up in front of 200 plus of your peers and speak to it for, you know, close to an hour, right? I mean, this was not a short presentation either.
Yeah.
I didn't even have an overnight. So it was like the day of.
Right. No preparation window.
So no preparation.
No all-nighter time to pull.
Exactly. At least if I had an overnight, I could have pulled an all-nighter to prepare. So my biggest takeaway, and I do this to this day, is I'm a chronic over-preparer.
Sure.
I record myself both video and
audio. Yep.
Audio.
Got to do it.
To hear myself, to listen for those nervous giggles, to just try to work out and just to work on the phrasings. And the biggest takeaway I would have, because I was always so jealous of people who seem like such natural presenters who are up there. And I wouldn't say I'm not to the point, you know, those people who are up there walking around looking so natural, that's not me. But I would say, you don't know. They might be the same way as me. Those people that are just always preparing, preparing, preparing. They might not be as natural as they appear. I would just say prepare, prepare, prepare. And it really does help with the nerves. And actually, I would not focus on a friend in the audience, because the friend will make you laugh, even if they're not trying to.
Okay. That's how it works for you if you look at a friend in the audience.
That's how it works for me, because, you know, the friend to me will make me giggle even if they're not trying to.
Got it. That's really important. Know your triggers. Know what works for you may not work for somebody else, and vice versa. Try stuff. But if you realize that, you know what, that's a very bad path for me to go down, okay, recalculate that route. But it sounds like, if nothing else, you learned the important art of preparation for sure. And thank you for reiterating the importance of recording yourself in preparation, because, boy, there is no tool more effective in getting you clear on what's working and what is not than watching yourself on video. Correct?
Oh, my goodness. And you learn so many things about the way your face moves.
Yeah, we all have that "what am I doing with my face" moment when we're watching ourselves. Eyebrows and weird face. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Facial movements. I'm like, I think the first time I did it, I said to my husband, I'm like, does my face always do that when I talk?
Yes, we have all
so
had those
moments. It will
moments.
Be painful and uncomfortable to watch yourself, but trust me, it's worth it, because you'll feel very prepared when you get up in front of that audience.
Yes.
It's worth it.
I always say that the video camera is like your best friend who has absolutely no tact. Going to tell you exactly what's great, exactly what's most definitely not great, and give you most likely an idea of what should be done otherwise to fix it. But boy, they're doing it with your best interest at heart. And that's what matters most. Well, Melissa, this has been a lot of fun. Tell us how we can learn more about you and Avery Dennison.
Well, Avery Dennison's website is www.averydennison.com. And I am on LinkedIn. So you can find me at Melissa Schoger on LinkedIn, S-C-H-O-G-E-R. That's how you spell my last name. So,
and we'll put all that in the show notes. So you'll have a nice, easy link to connect with Melissa. Of course, if you do connect with Melissa, and I highly recommend that you do, that you, of course, let her know that you heard her here on the Speaking to Influence podcast. So she knows how many people absolutely loved this interview as much as I did. Melissa, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
And to everybody else out there, thank you for tuning in. As always, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or your platform of choice so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendation for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Laura Sokola, and I want to sincerely thank you for listening to the Speaking to Influence podcast. If you love listening to these episodes as much as I love bringing them to you, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And please, go to iTunes right now to rate and review our podcast in order to help us expand our reach so even more people can master the 3 C's: to command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.